This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, April 20th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll get a report back from last night's Boulder City Council meeting with journalist Shay Castle. Then we'll hear about a community-based research project to monitor air quality around the Suncor oil refinery in Commerce City. As always on Wednesday morning, Chris Moore will share his commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, and then it's the Hightower Lowdown. On this morning's A Public Affair, we'll broadcast a panel on jazz and democracy that took place earlier this month at CU Boulder's Conference on World Affairs. Then at 9:30, Uncle Jeff will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Chiara DeMare.
Charges are pending for the Tally Ho fire in Gun Barrel yesterday. The 100% contained fire started around 1 p.m. and burned through 10 acres, but no lives or structures were lost. Authorities haven't declared the cause of the Tally Ho fire due to the ongoing investigation of charges for a Gun Barrel resident that are currently pending. The damages are estimated to be between $5,000 to $10,000. There was no evacuation order put in place. However, Boulder County Sheriff's Office said a few door-to-door evacuations did occur. According to unofficial reports posted last night, the people of Louisville voted against the building of the Red Tail Ridge Master Plan. The election was to decide what to do with the nearly 400 acres between US 36 and Northwest Parkway. A group of people in opposition gathered more than twice the number of signatures required for a referendum. The city council decided to leave the decision up to the voters, who ultimately shot it down. Regional Transport District, or RTD, announced Monday that masks are no longer mandatory when traveling. The no mask signs will be removed from the buses as soon as practical, according to their website. For the second year in a row, Nell Rojas has finished as the top American woman in the Boston Marathon. Nicole Rubin reports.
Nell Rojas, a 34-year-old business owner in Boulder and running coach, came in 10th place at the Boston Marathon this week. With an average mile time of just under 6 minutes, she cut 75 seconds to her previous Boston Marathon win. According to the Boston Globe, Rojas said that she dedicated her race to all of the strong girls, the Latinas, and minorities. After 52 years, the Best Western Plus in Boulder on Baseline Road and 28th Street has closed. The Boulder City Council convened Tuesday to go over proposals for a new student housing apartment complex, which will replace the former hotel. A Chicago-based development agency, Core Spaces, purchased the hotel for $28.5 million from Nata Enterprise Partnership late last year. The proposal states that it will become the hub, a housing development for CU students. For KGNU, I'm Nicole Rubin.
Traffic will be disrupted for at least the next few months on Baseline Road between Foothills Parkway and 55th Street, Hannah Stewart reports.
Starting today, the Foothills and Baseline Sanitary Sewer Improvement Project is heading west. Eastbound lanes on Baseline Road, between Foothills Parkway and 55th Street, will be closed and moved to the westbound lanes. Crews expect to be installing the sanitary sewer piping for the next 2 to 3 months. The project aims to replace 7,300 feet of sanitary sewer piping in response to aging infrastructure and to increase capacity of the wastewater collection system. The hope is to avoid sewer backups like those experienced during the September 2013 flood. Additionally, the project will mean that some customers will experience brief water and sewage outages, but the city reports that customers will receive notifications prior to any planned service interruptions. For KGNU, I'm Hannah Stewart.
Friday the 22nd is Earth Day, and Sustainable Resilient Longmont, in partnership with the Longmont Museum, is planning to celebrate. On Saturday, the Longmont Museum will host educational programming, arts, crafts, and local music from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Raptor Education Foundation will also have a live presentation, a herd of baby goats, and food trucks. A full schedule of the Earth Day activities can be found on Sustainable Resilient Longmont's website. Also happening this week, Bike and Roll to School Week. This week is Bike and Roll to School Week for the Boulder Valley School District. The week aligns with Earth Day, so students are encouraged to enjoy the outdoors. Students will be greeted with stickers, snacks, and other activities throughout the week. It's going to be a sunny and slightly breezy day for the Front Range, with a high of 72 and a low of 46. The weather should stay mostly clear for the week, up until Friday, where we may experience some rain. Outside the studio, it's 50 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Chiara Damari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder City Council met in person last night. Joining me for a live roundup is Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
Last night's meeting was the first in-person, in-chambers meeting since the start of the pandemic, right?
Well, they did do one meeting briefly to decide whether or not to do in-person meetings. but that's it. Yes, this was the first full meeting of the full council in chambers. Obviously, no public were welcome, just council and staff. The public will be welcomed back in person next month.
So while the public is in this limbo hybrid of its own, how are members of the public able to participate?
They can watch on Channel 8 or the live stream on YouTube like they've always been able to. They are still able to, if you're speaking, you know, during open comment or a public hearing, you can still get a link to the Zoom meeting and be in the Zoom meeting. I started out that way, but the sound was off and switched to YouTube. And that's why they're giving it a month to make sure they can work out any technical bugs before they bring the public back in person, because we will still continue to have hybrid public participation, even when we're fully back in person. So it needs to be, you know, all the kinks worked out.
I was going to ask, like, everybody moving back from, for those who are able to work remotely, moving back into the office kind of comes with its bumps in the road. And so we saw that in city council as well. Last night's meeting, there were three main agenda items. Can you go over those and just give us kind of an overview of each?
Absolutely. So the first was a really quick update on CU South, the South Boulder Creek flood mitigation work that's going on there. Just let us know where we are in our process and what the rough schedule is for the remainder of that work. So we're looking at permitting and design right now through roughly the fall of 2024, when construction will start following that for at least 2 years. So things are on track once council finally, you know, narrowed down a design. A couple big hurdles, obviously, for that project that still remain is this fall, voters will weigh whether or not to undo that annexation. A reminder that the CU South annexation is kind of the flood project is dependent on that, since CU is giving Boulder the land for that in exchange for being able to build a southern campus there. So that's the first big hurdle. And the second one will be disposal. Open Space has to give up a couple of acres for us to build the flood wall on what is now Open Space land. And that's a formal process that requires a vote of the Open Space Board of Trustees and City Council. And there will almost certainly be a petition. There's a 60-day window in which citizens can petition to make disposal subject to a vote of all of Boulder, all of the people. And that seems almost a given. Since the opposition to development at CU South has already managed to put two ballot items before the people, one of which was rejected last fall, and we'll see what happens with undoing annexation this fall. So that is a big one to get through, and that will happen sometime between mid-2023 and 2024. And then the main discussion last night was outdoor dining and the closure of West Pearl. Council is very in favor of outdoor dining and continuing that, kind of shaping it up into more uniform rules, because it's gotten kind of haphazard. And so they're going to standardize, you know, what can you do with outdoor dining? It'll be no more tents, no more enclosed structures, and everything has to be ADA accessible. That will be, of course, after this continue, this current hodgepodge that we have will continue at least through August, and the transition time to the new system is still a little in flux. Council was all on board for that, and that will be citywide, not just downtown, if people choose to pursue outdoor dining. And the other big discussion as part of outdoor dining was whether or not West Pearl should remain closed to cars as it has for the last couple of years. Council was a little bit more split on that, but there seemed to be some of a consensus to say, you know, leave it closed for now to cars as we work out a longer term plan, because what we're doing right now really doesn't work. It's, again, difficult to access for people with mobility challenges. It's hard to remove snow. So they're going to figure out a long-term solution for that. And then finally, we got a very quick update on the library district negotiations with the county commissioners. As you know, listeners will remember, they're quite far apart on that from city council. And Mayor Brockett, who's been handling those, said, yeah, we're still far apart. It doesn't look like they're going to reach an agreement. The county wanted to really limit what the district can ask for in terms of a property tax. They weren't really willing to wiggle too much on that. So it looks as if library district advocates will be putting that to voters via petition. They only need 100 signatures. So voters will be weighing both questions at once this fall. Do you want a district and do you want to pay for it, with that amount to be determined?
And you mentioned there's only a threshold of 100 signatures. What's changed in the citizen petitioning system since the last election?
Great question. So we have had, last election, we had an online option, Boulder Direct Democracy Online, which is quite unique, first of its kind in the nation, which allows people to sign petitions online. And there was a lot of concern because you have to do one or the other if you're running a campaign. You have to do online or paper. You couldn't combine them. And that has since changed. You can collect signatures in person and you can collect them online. And the city will do the work of vetting them, making sure there's no duplicates. And that works a lot better for campaigns, because online, while it's easy, since the system is new, a lot of folks haven't learned about it yet, don't know how to use it. And it's really hard to get eyeballs to an online campaign, whereas in person, it just seems to be a lot easier to stand by the grocery store in the library. So that's a big change, and one that should help petition groups gather signatures much more easily.
And we only have about a minute left, but I want to ask you, there's quite a bit of information in this week's online edition of Boulder Meet. Can you give some highlights of things that you'd really like to let people know about?
Absolutely. Well, I'm very pleased with the story last week about price gouging. And that's in terms of rentals following the Marshall Fire. There've been a lot of increases in rent, and as it turns out, there are really no rules at the state, at least of yet, of how high rents can go. I wasn't able to get the state to talk with me, so I don't know if they do have rules that they're just not revealing, but none of the real estate professionals nor myself could find anything concrete about that. So that's something to keep an eye on, because rents are going up and they'll probably continue to go up. And it would be nice to have some firm say from the state on what's okay and what's not, so renters can follow up if they need to.
Shay Castle, journalist and founder of BoulderBeat.News, thanks as always for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Suncor refinery in Commerce City has been operating for nearly 100 years, encountering relatively little regulatory pushback when it comes to permit renewals and emissions. But that's changed recently. The Environmental Protection Agency notified Colorado Health Department officials that it will formally object to parts of Suncor's operating permit renewal request. Air Quality Investigation and Research for Equity, or AIRE, is a year-long community-based research project to bring awareness, education, unity, and action around poor air quality in the neighborhood. KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with Olga Gonzalez, executive director of Cultivando, a Latino health equity organization, about the community-based independent air monitoring effort.
Suncor Refinery has been in our community for almost 100 years. And so there are many families who've been there for many, many generations. And the reason Cultivando became involved is because we do center health equity for the Latino community, in particular Spanish-speaking residents in Commerce City. Latinos are the majority of the population there. However, they have not been heard in terms of their concerns. So for many years, especially parents have reported that their children have suffered from headaches, breathing problems, asthma. Some report that family members have developed cancer. And some feel that it could be related to the toxics that are being emitted by the Suncor refinery. The smell is very evident, as is occasionally there's this yellow cloud in the air. You know, a couple years ago, we could see it from our windows at our offices in Commerce City. And all that the residents received back then was just a free car wash, an offer for a free car wash from Suncor. And so people felt like, okay, well, maybe it's just dust. But at the same time, the children at schools were locked in. They were not allowed to go outside because the air was so unsafe for their health. And so they've had many concerns, and, you know, children have had a hard time being at school, focusing. Mothers were reporting their kids were often late for school. They just weren't ready to learn. There was just too much happening. And at first they thought their kids were just complaining about school, but in reality, they were showing up late because it was hard for them to just, you know, they had headaches and all these other symptoms. So they asked Cultivando to initiate this project to do our own independent air monitoring. Suncor has been monitoring itself, and therefore they're reporting nothing is wrong. And so the community asked for independent monitoring to happen, and that it happened from a trusted community organization. And that's why Cultivando is doing the work that we're doing.
How long have you been monitoring the air quality there? And with which
it's
machines?
It's only been for a few months. We had a late start in terms of when we received the funds and then setting up the equipment and everything. But it's been happening for, I believe, about 3 months now. So we have both a stationary monitor as well as a mobile monitor. The difference with our monitors is like night and day. The monitors that we are using pick up about 50 toxics, including radioactivity, which has never been done. The Suncor monitors traditionally picked up to 3 toxics, and that was very intermittent. So ours are happening continuously, and already we're finding some areas of concern in our community.
So what do you want others to know about this situation? Why is this so urgent now?
It is urgent not only because of the health effects that it's having on our community, but also it's concerning that government agencies that are supposed to protect the health of our residents is failing. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has continued to reissue permits to Suncor to continue to operate. And this is before we even had a chance to do even a year's worth of monitoring. And so the community feels very betrayed and not supported, especially from local government and state government that's supposed to protect them. And now we know that the Environmental Protection Agency is becoming involved, and we will be having conversations with them as well. They've reached out to us to really listen to what the community is saying. And so our role is really to elevate those concerns that our community is reporting, and then to determine what steps would be taken. So if we find that harm has been caused to our community, if children did develop asthma or cancer or whatever, what is the reparations going to look like for those who are impacted, for all the families who've had to miss work, miss pay, kids who've had to miss school, medical bills? And, you know, if they have chronic health conditions, there's going to be a cost associated with that. So mostly it's remembering that it's not just about business, but it's about people who are suffering every single day because nothing has been done. So this project is lending a voice to the community that's been impacted, and it's really elevating their leadership so that they can determine what they need to feel safe, to feel healthy in their communities.
What are you going to be doing on April 21st for people to know? What are you going to disclose that is not only important for those that are living close by, but for all those that pass by and live in Denver?
Yes, so this event, the Empower Hour that we were invited to speak at, is going to provide us an opportunity to share a little bit more about Cultivando and the work that we're doing, more on the monitors. We also have a youth component to really cultivate the next generation of people who will take care of the environment. You know, the earth is our mother, literally, and we are destroying her, and there won't be much left for us and for future generations. I think scientists have warned us for many, many years now, and people have not listened because they've chosen profit over human life, quite honestly. And so it will be an opportunity to learn about our work and an invitation for people to get involved. And so our hope is to, again, generate the next generation of community leaders who hopefully will come back and continue in this work.
Thank you so much. I have been speaking with Olga Gonzalez, Executive Director of Cultivando. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make Citizens Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. You may remember that back in 2020, meatpacking facilities were breeding grounds for hundreds of cases of COVID. The Public Justice Food Project proclaims all workers deserve healthy, safe, dignified working conditions. Tell Congress it's time to ensure meat and poultry workers have essential protections by passing the Protecting America's Meatpacking Workers Act, H.R. 6250, and Senate Bill 3285. Legislation introduced in the House and Senate is aimed at improving working conditions and whistleblowing protections in the meat and poultry processing industries. Under the Protecting America's Meatpacking Workers Act, Senate Bill 3285, specific occupational safety and health standards would be established to protect workers in meat and poultry processing plants. In addition, an OSHA regional emphasis program would be created to address worker safety issues such as amputation hazards, ergonomics, hazards related to line speeds, use of chemicals, and working conditions in high and low temperatures. The Act would strengthen current protections against employer retaliation when workers refuse to perform job duties under reasonable apprehension, create a standardized, publicly available reporting process during pandemics requiring facilities to report the number of workers who have become ill, along with their racial demographics and employment status, allow facilities to designate a worker representative to accompany physical inspections, establish a new funding for OSHA inspectors, and prohibit the Agriculture Secretary from issuing processing line speed waivers before facilities agree to a U.S. Department of Agriculture inspection that shows a line speed increase, quote, would not have an adverse impact on worker safety. The House bill, H.R. 6250, sponsored by Representative Ro Khanna from California, is currently in the Livestock and Foreign Agriculture Subcommittee. More recently, Senator Cory Booker put forth a companion bill. Booker claims that meatpacking workers, quote, often face exploitative and dangerous work conditions. We must end this era of abusive practices and begin to ensure that all workers, farmers, and ranches have a safe and fair opportunity to earn a living. The Protecting America's Meatpacking Workers Act would provide essential protections to meatpacking workers and is a critical piece of transforming our food system to one that is rooted in resilience, fairness, and justice, close quote. In a separate press release, United Food and Commercial Workers International Union President Mark Perron said U.S. consumers, quote, deserve to know that their food is safe, made here in the United States, and comes from American workers who are protected on the job, close quote. If you have thoughts on Protecting America's Meatpacking Workers Act being considered in both houses of Congress, you can contact your senators and congresspeople. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. Today I'm going to talk about anemia. I know you've all heard of that. When you're feeling all like fatigued and maybe you look kind of pale, it's only really through a blood test known as a hematocrit to test your levels can tell you for sure. But, you know, pale fingernails, pale tongue, and if you look inside the inner eyelid, if that's kind of pale, those are all signs you might be anemic. So we tend to think of anemia as an iron deficiency. And there's also other factors like a lack of folate, which is found in foliage, or vitamin B12. So there's many causes of anemia. Could be from excessive menstruation, peptic ulcers, hemorrhoids, giving blood, or maybe just a diet that is lacking in essential nutrients. We know that pregnant women can be prone to anemia as we're giving so much to the baby. So what can we do about it? A lot of times commercial irons are really constipating. And we also know that if you're anemic, you might also be, you know, really tired. And it's very important. Iron is found in every cell in the body. And we do know that iron is best assimilated in the presence of vitamin C. And again, because it's not only iron that's a factor, B12 and folate are also factors. There's a really great product called Blood Builder that has all those things in there in one place. And again, a lot of the iron products out there can be hard on your stomach. I tend to avoid recommending ferrous sulfate, ferrous fumarate, or ferrous gluconate, ferrous chelate. Those are all going to be easier to assimilate and easier on your stomach. But we can also eat foods that are high in iron. Green leafy vegetables are key, beets, blackstrap molasses, cherries, raisins, red meat, but I'm not going to encourage anyone to eat too much of that, sea vegetables. But there's also herbs high in iron, and one of my favorite is nettles. Nettles. We know that's one of my favorite herbs. And there's also an herb called yellow dock that can improve iron assimilation. So there are things we can do. Don't ruin your digestive system with constipating products out there. Also look at, you know, correcting the cause, work on your diet. There's so many ways that we can heal ourselves. Nature is often benevolent. Thanks so much for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown and then a rebroadcast of a panel at the Conference on World Affairs.